So says the Lord, Jehovah, see, I will lift up my hand to the nations and raise my signal to the peoples, and they will come carrying your sons in their arms, and your daughters will be carried upon their shoulders. Isaiah 49 and 22. The Ward Green translation from 2003, our daily scripture for today, little children. And so, that is speaking about those same children that would be in abundance where they had not been present with Israel prior to that time. And it would be, of course, a great and pleasant thing for Israel to have her children back again. As it said in verse 17, your children will be arriving soon, which we saw previously in our study of the book of Isaiah chapter 49. So, in today's study, we have the Ark of Urartu, chapter 6, paragraph 4. I just need to adjust the position of the images in this article because just the alignment is wrong with the text, in some cases with the left-hand side particularly. So in later articles, I decided to just abandon the idea of left and right photos, and I put the photos always in the center to prevent this kind of problem, which can occur, which can make it very difficult in different browsers with different screen resolutions and screen sizes. So it may not be a problem on a wider screen. I don't think it is. I think most people may not have the problem. Even if I made it wider right now, I think it wouldn't be a problem. Where I want to align something. There we go. Okay. Get the alignment. See, if I made this wider, then I have to scroll up to get back to where we were. But then we wouldn't be able to read the article. But there we now see the text complete. And the caption here that was lost almost completely, more lost than it is now, is almost fixed by widening the screen. So that's the issue there. When I originally designed it, I did not account for the screen width, not fully enough in my design of the layout. And just seeing as I was a fairly inexperienced web designer, and I design my web pages completely from scratch using the HTML, the raw HTML. That's why there's some anomalies there, which wouldn't be there perhaps, but there might be some even worse anomalies if I used a cookie cutter type program. So, in today's paragraph, 6.4, it begins with, or is preceded by, I'm not sure which paragraph this is part of, I guess it's part of this paragraph, a photograph of the actress Salma Hayek. And in the text, in the paragraph, it says, it's these expressions I never give that keep me searching for a heart of gold. And I'm growing old, a reference to the Neil Young song Heart of Gold. A new day has dawned at the Green household. Who's feeling jealous for me? That's a quote from, well, where is that from? Is it from, it's from Numbers 11:29. I believe that must be right. Yeah. Numbers 11:29. It's a reference to Moses, I believe, saying that he wasn't jealous by the fact that other people could have authority or act as prophets in verse 27, Numbers 11:27. However, Moses said to him, speaking about Moses speaking to Joshua, because Joshua said, stop these prophets from speaking. And Moses said, are you feeling jealous for me? Because Joshua thought that Moses was the prophet and the others should not be acting as prophets. Evidently, that's what Joshua thought, because he was telling Moses to stop them from prophesying. But Moses said, no, I wish that all of Jehovah's people were prophets. Yeah. That's a wonderful scripture, is it not? But there are other references there to Psalms and Hebrews. Continuing our text reading in the paragraph 6-4, the fire is roaring in the wood stove right about now, I wrote. Fire needs air, as I said at the outset. So it needs a hole for the air to get in. You can't just stack the wood all right on top of itself without any air. And I suppose for the waste to get out. So in a fire, when it's burning, it's not just that you need spaces for the air to get in. You also need a space for the combustion products to leave, you know, to exit. And that's what smothers a fire, right? When there's no room for air to get in, nor for the carbon dioxide or whatever the waste product is to get out. Any resemblance to real people, I wrote, was purely coincidental. Big grin. We need to test the inspired expressions, loves. 1 John 4 and 1. Let's look at that. 1 John 4 and 1. Beloved ones, do not believe every inspired expression, but test the inspired expressions to see whether they originate with God, because many false prophets have gone forth into the world. Right, there are false prophets as well as real prophets. Okay, I've been trying, working on some numbers, I admit, but right now it's time for my first cup of tea for today. Since I can't get organic lemons locally. In those days, I was drinking tea with lemon, but I'm not even drinking tea nowadays. I'm drinking matcha tea or, what else am I drinking that's, well, nothing else that has, yes, iced tea, that's right. Iced tea I'm drinking also with lemon in it. That's right. Yeah. But I buy it pre-mixed. I wrote here, since I can't get organic lemons locally, I might drink it with Himalayan salt and organic honey. Back then, I was very concerned about organic. Everything had to be organic. That's because of my health, which has since then vastly improved. And I'm not so concerned that everything has to be organic. Lemons grow on a tree. They're not likely to be anything but organic. Unless the tree is growing in some chemical waste dump or something, of course, which is possible. But I might drink the tea, I said, if I don't have lemons, perhaps I could drink it with Himalayan salt and organic honey. Like the Hunzas used when they took rock salt with their tea in the mountains of Pakistan. I tried it. It's now a few minutes later, and I think that I'm still too used to the lemons with the honey in my tea. I need to go check the fire now, but I will be right back. I'm back now, and the fire is hot today, I have been told. It's time for another cup of tea, and then the second pot. Well, this is when Anne was still with us. So I could have been told that the fire was hot by Anne, she could have told me that. I noticed that the green tea I now drink comes from China. This somehow strangely reminds me of an old expression, something I heard, about all the tea in China. Another one I remember from way back, plug your ears, kids, is dead as a doornail, end quote, which I altered in more recent times to hold on, quote, tight as a doornail, end quote. I would like to welcome y'all to the Ark of Urartu. That's our study for today in the Ark of Urartu. It's not a very long and not a very technical study at all. It's more like a fire building study and talk about making tea. But I also find it interesting about, and also the wonderful picture, or the picture of the lovely actress, Salma Hayek. But we have the... We're coming to the end of our paragraph here, and tomorrow we have another picture, but that's a different actress. But we have, yes, so I'm going to try and restrain myself from speaking about tomorrow's study. I really have... Well, I'll explain that tomorrow, but because I just don't want to get started on that. Another one I remember from way back, right? Oh, yeah, this saying. So this other thing about this paragraph was this saying that tight as a doornail. If I hadn't written that down, I would have forgotten that. Because, I mean, years ago, it was always said. I think my dad used that expression, but it's a common English expression, dead as a doornail. Dead as a doornail, which just means, it could mean that something is doomed if it's dead as a doornail, or it could be somebody is speaking about, you would not speak of a person as being dead in that way, but you would speak as you would might speak of some insect or some other creature as being dead as a doornail. But it was more an expression that referred to, I think, in a figurative sense, dead as a doornail, you know, rather than literally things being dead. But it didn't make much sense, dead as a doornail. I mean, at least I didn't understand it. But maybe it had to do with accuracy, dead accurate, because that's what it was, because doornails had to be accurate or the door wouldn't swing on its hinge and line up with the door frame properly. Doors are very precise when they have to close. They have to line up well so that the latch, you know, lines up with the other side of the latch, and everything, you know, it has to clear top and bottom. It can't be rubbing on any part of the door frame. So dead as a doornail makes sense from that standpoint. But I didn't particularly find that expression to be useful, so I changed it to tight as a doornail, which is interesting also to me, and at least just to me. I'm not saying it's interesting to anyone else. Tight as a doornail. And I just thought it was an interesting thought, I guess. That's why I came up with that. But I wasn't using it with anything in particular, I don't think. What was I talking about? Tight as a doornail. Yeah, it was more of just a I can't remember what specifically it would have referred to. I don't think it referred to anything. So it was something that I found to be an interesting thought in my fantasy land or something of, but not referring to anything particular. So I can't think of what it was about. I guess it must have referred to something tight. So it was referring to, you know, tightening a screw or something like that, or a bolt. Had to be something that could be tight or loose. So it must have been something like that. But these expressions, just like when I recorded the, I mean, it's so important that I recorded these things and wrote them down. And it, you know, it's not always something we do or remember to do, is write things down, which can be then later used, like now. But the one I find to be particularly interesting, more so than this even, but this is interesting enough. But the other one was how I found out about the chronology, you know, how I discovered the whole idea of the chronology of the time of the coins, the coinage of King Phidon and all of that time period, and how I learned that from the book Synchronology, which I discovered using the search of Hermes and Hermes, right, which is recorded here. If I hadn't written that down, wouldn't have remembered how I found that book, Synchronology. So why was I looking for Hermes and Hermes? Well, probably because Hermes and Hermes were significant names in the Greek mythology. And I had a feeling that they were probably related somehow, right? And I wanted to find out what the connection was, since Hermes is similar to Hermes and so on. So I was doing that sort of research right at the moment. I mean, that was the exact search. But I was at a point where I wanted to learn my family history, and I hadn't found anything that was I don't think I'd really begun to do my family history research at that point. It was such a long time ago when I did that, but it may have been that, but I'm not sure. It may have been, well, I wrote it down, so let's search for that. Yeah, I was doing my family research, but after I found this Hermes and Hermes, all of a sudden my family research shifted, and it was no longer my family research. It was now the history of the world that I was doing, which I always wanted to do, but didn't have any accurate source. And I found what I believe to be the most remarkable source I'd ever seen, which was Mr. Crosthwaite, his book, Synchronology, Charles Crosthwaite's book from 1839, Synchronology, which was how everything had to synchronize with everything else in the time period according to the generations also of those families of the people who were chronologically positioned, right? So the chronology had to be consistent according to generations. So one thing we could also look at too is earlier, just 2 days ago, when we looked at this table, the Armenian history, if we calculate all the way down from Haik in 2700 and something, say 2750 compared to 350, that'd be 2400 years, right? 27 to 300. 2,400 years. Divided by the 59 generations that we found. Well, what was it, 59? It's only 58, actually. Because there's a 59 generation difference, but two of the men are brothers and not father and son. So we said, therefore, 58, that would be a 41-year generation on average. But that's not unreasonable, considering that in the modern times, even as early as 1500 BC, the average generation was about 30 years, not more than that. So 40 as an average implies that the average generation going back to 2700 might have been quite a bit larger than 30, because the average is 40 for all of these. So it might have been more like an average generation of even 100, for all we know, at the beginning, and then it may have dropped off fairly quickly because, or, you know, it may have been somewhat less than 100 at the time of Hake. It's hard to say. But we could see how if the average generation fell fairly quickly, then arriving at 30 years per generation by the time of Vahi, number 60 in 350 BC, we would see that the average, you know, between 100 and 30, it's somewhere between there, but it could be as high as 40 or 41 if most of these generations, you know, were closer to 40 rather than to 100, then, or to 50 rather. If most of these are close to 50, the early ones, and then the later ones are close to 30, then we'd have 40 as an average, right? 50 to 30, yeah, with an average of 40. But even if these began at 100 years per generation, if they fell off quickly and later on fell off more gradually, then the average could still be 41 years and ending at 30. So the average there of 41 indicates that people used to live longer than we do today. And that's why this is such an important genealogy, because it's the longest one that we have, as I mentioned, from which we can determine dates, you know, or I should say, from which we can determine average generations, because we know already, we already believe we had the dates. We're not using it to determine the dates. We could have done it that way, but we didn't. We determine the dates first, then we can calculate, and that we are calculating the average now of the generation. But anyway, you can see how there's a lot of ways of doing it also. So this has been quite interesting to see that Armenian family history genealogy. We're going to be looking at some eclipses of the time period too of Nimrod. Oh, I said something the other day I want to clarify or correct. And that is, where is this window? Where is it open? Where is it? Oh, here, I guess. Yeah. At the time of Nimrod, we have 2747 BC, which is minus 2746. At Eridu, which is latitude 45 or about 46 degrees, longitude 30 degrees north. Sorry, well, that's wrong. I entered it wrong. I realize now. It wasn't my fault entirely. It was just that it was put in the opposite order. 30, 49, 57, 45, 59, 46. 30, 49, 50, I can't do it. Oh, anyway, it's not that critical, okay? The longitude and latitude, they don't affect the position of the sun critically. It's not much of a difference. This is accurate enough. But let's look at the actual images that we're going to be looking at in the article just to demonstrate or prove that I did it correctly in the actual previous work. No, I did it wrong then, too. 30 degrees north is wrong. Oh, wait a minute. No, that's correct. Oh, it is correct. It is. Is it really 30 degrees north? I find that hard to believe. Maybe it is right. Okay, so it's 45 degrees east. Yeah, it's much further east, isn't it? Eridu from where Egypt is. So that's right. Yeah. I guess it is right. Okay. It just seemed to me that it was further north. A lot, you know, further north. A lot further north. Like, than for example, Memphis. Maybe it's not much further north than... No, I just can't see it. Let's look at a map. But anyway, we'll do that if we have time. Let's look at a map when we have time. But the sun you see here is in Libra. And Scorpius. Scorpius, the constellation, is right there. S-C-O. So it's right... The sun is in Scorpius. If we were to go one step forward, we would see the sun is now in Scorpius in October 25th, 2747, whereas we were in September 25th, if we go back. But that was September 25th is Hathor 17. And that's what we're going to look at in the next couple of days when we're looking at this. That's what I just wanted to show you. I've just been looking at this to make sure that we get it right when we do it. But here's the actual Hathor date. What have I done here? Let's do that. There we go. It's September 25th, 2747, which in our calculator is 2747 BC, indicated as minus 2747 in our calculator, LIAP. But it's Hathor 17, or third Akut 17 in the Egyptian calendar. This is Egyptian time, 3 hours east of Greenwich. September 25th is Hathor 17, and that's where the legend talked about Osiris being shut up in the ark and the fact that he died when the sun was rising with Scorpius in the ascendancy. Scorpius, the constellation, was ascendant. And that's what we see in that time period in this sky chart, which is that this is the Sky Chart 3 demo, which is the old version of Sky Chart that I'm running in Windows under UTM. As a virtual machine, I'm running this Sky Chart program. So the sun, and it's very interesting that Mercury is right there. Because Mercury is Hermes. Right? Isn't that true? Mercury is Hermes, the messenger of the gods, known as Mercury in the Roman and Hermes in the Greek mythology. And also, this is the same person as Thoth, the messenger who invented writing, is also Thoth, the Egyptian god. I believe it's the same god. And we know Thoth was involved in shutting up Nimrod, or rather, it was called Osiris. Thoth shut up Osiris in the box of wood and caused his death. So this is the only time when Mercury is right in this position, right next to the sun here, and in the constellation Scorpius. Only at this time of year, and only ever, would we find Mercury close to the sun, only at certain times. Like, it's not going to always be the case that Mercury will be... Of course, Mercury is always near the sun. That's true. I mean, but not that close. Let's just try it. Let's advance further. Let's go back a month. You see how far away Mercury is now? From the sun, a lot further away, by just a month's difference. And also, of course, the sun moves through the constellations during the months of the year, and so now the sun's in Libra, 1 month earlier than where we were. But you see how just at the time when the sun, only in that year... Because if we change to a different year, the alignment of Mercury and the sun won't be the same in that other year, even though the sun will be in the correct constellation during that month of the year. It'll be similar, right? But the problem is the Egyptian calendar will not be the same as we go through the years. If we change by a century, the Egyptian calendar will be quite different. Like let's say we're in... Well, right now, here we have Hathor 17, right? It's September 25th. But let's go 100 years earlier. First, let's change to a new moon. 100 years earlier, September 25th is now Phaophi 22. Phaophi 22. It's not Hathor 17. It's the previous month, second Akut 22. And it's still September 25th in the Julian calendar, 100 years earlier. So it would be a totally different time of year, which would mean the sun would be in a different constellation at that time. if we went 100 years earlier, you see? I mean, we can do it here. We can go, let's go animation 100 years. And let's go back, step backward, and see where the sun goes. Now we have Mercury not positioned, you know, too far from the sun, but not as close as it was. But the sun is still in Libra. But we'd have to go, like we said, to get to Hathor, we'd have to go earlier in the year. Or later in the year. Yeah, so let's advance. I mean, I haven't even done this. I never had an opportunity to do this. Let's advance it now. Forward 1 month. And now it's less cluttered. We can see it. But see, the sun's in the same position relative to... We have to go another month. I think. Maybe. No, didn't change. Wait a minute. Something is not right. Well, that's because we just went 100 years twice. Let's go back. Back. So we're at 2846, and let's change to 1 month. Increment. That was a week. It's wrong. 1 month. Where's the month? Come on. Can't read. It's such small, blurry text. It's not just small, it's blurry. Let's go backward a month. Forward a month, we said. Yeah, forward a month and see what happens. Now we're in Scorpio. The sun's in Scorpio. Mercury's not nearby. You know, and we're on October 25th. What time is it? We're just about out of time, but October 25th. So if we go 1 month forward, well, that's just the new moon. Let's go 25. In our LIAP calculator, it's okay. It's Hathor 22. We'd have to go back. Let's go back. Hathor 17 would be October 20th. So we're somewhere near that. It's October 25th in that century. But we haven't... You know, so the sun's in approximately the right place. Is it? It's in Scorpio. Yeah. But Mercury wasn't nearby. So it doesn't fit the myth about Thoth being near the sun like that. It implies that it's got to do with this myth about Thoth and or Mercury. So I think it's there's a lot more work to do on this to investigate. But we don't have any other dates to compare with. So I think we're in the right place with the date we have. So today's study, it's November 5th, 2024 of the Common Era, and the time is 21:59 Eastern Time. I'm Ward Green. I love you very much. Thank you very much for listening and watching. By the way, this is Sissy, the Rolex imitation, and this is another Rolex imitation, or at least movement, Annie, the Bauhaus watch. This one's a Cadison. It's an imitation of the Rolex based on the Miyota. Both of them are Miyota movements. One of them doesn't do hacking. And that's it for today's study. It's time to go.